Hi, this is Pete Fornital on the Crawdaddy Rock Review, produced in association with the editors of Crawdaddy Magazine and presented by Discwasher, makers of Ultimate Record Care Equipment. Stay tuned for a fast hour of music, news, and interviews. On this edition of the Crawdaddy Rock Review, we'll feature Todd Rundgren, who talks about his band Utopia, his days with the group Naz, and his current producing efforts, and a very special interview with comedian David Brenner, who talks about comedy, his first performance on The Tonight Show, his relationship with Freddie Prinze, and more. We'll also feature our regular nonsense news and music reviews. We'll start with a listen to Earth, Wind, and Fire as the Crawdaddy Rock Review continues. And now the Crawdaddy Rock Review, presented by Discwasher, gives you a capsule summary of thoughts and reactions to a brand new album release. Earth, Wind, and Fire have come a long way from the jazzed-out horns and elasticized rhythms and coolness of their first album. Far from being some type of crazy R&B version of the Art Ensemble of Chicago, Maurice White has over the years turned his band into arguably our greatest hit-making machine. No question that All in All is tighter than a glove. The horn section that'd do Fred Wesley proud firms their groove once again. Listen to the energy of Run It. There's also your fair share of good as gold gold in Magic Mind. And even more in Serpentine Fire. Thank you. There's one thing that scares the editors of Crawdaddy magazine. With the salsa influence added by White's new writing partner, one Eddie Del Barrio, Earth, Wind, and Fire is getting just too smooth and silky for comfort. All in all, however, Earth, Wind, and Fire. This is Pete Fornital back on the Crawdaddy Rock Review, brought to you by Discwasher. And my guest this segment is Todd Rundgren, a writer, performer, composer, producer. Todd, what dimension of your abilities gives you the most satisfaction? Which one?
Clown.
I left that off the list.
You left that off, right? You know, well, I guess, you know, at any given point, you know, I would say that of the things that I do to make a public spectacle out of myself, I suppose singing is what I enjoy the most.
You make your stage shows even more hectic by really trying to present whole production numbers.
Well, actually, we're into the small scale and the large scale production at the same time. We're like our own opening act. We do a bit of a show with that, with no production, whatever. And then we do the thing with the whole giant schmigaze. So.
What is your thinking behind that?
Well, the thinking doesn't necessarily apply to other bands. It only applies to our band. You know, we're sort of extremists in a way. You know,
how
like so? We deal in cold, harsh realities, and then we deal in total fantasies as well. So it's part of our collective philosophy, which has to do with a certain idealism. And then at the same time, a certain militant confrontation with the realities that stand between you and your ideal. So.
You speak in terms of the we, meaning your band. One could get the impression that at various times in your career, you've been reluctant to step out in the spotlight alone, that you seem to prefer either the comfort or the team dimension of a complete band. Is that so?
In certain aspects, when you're working with other musicians, you seek for as much equity as possible in the performing situation because you want people to want some substance of themselves committed to the music they're playing rather than just being backup musicians, you know, and just like playing until they get tired of it and then doing it for the money or quitting, you know, and do something else. So when I'm more or less not constrained, but since I'm not folk singer, you know, I play with other musicians, and I like to have a situation where there's a lot of vital interplay happening. And probably in a certain sense, I don't particularly appreciate the fame phenomenon of the 60s and 70s. I'm not really into being Mr. Famous. You know?
Are the other members of the band comfortable with the partnership on that level?
I think to a degree. You know, I mean, in some ways, for instance, when we go to interviews and all we get asked about is the Nas, they just sort of sit there and get more and more frustrated because they don't have anything to talk about.
Sure.
Well, they don't bother to go to interviews anymore. That's why they're not here.
Well, let's take care of that and give a little bit of background on the evolution of Utopia as your performing unit.
Well, Willie, why don't you tell them a little bit? He's going to see when finally time for them to say something. They're not here. So, the evolution of Utopia started about 4 years ago and had six musicians in it. It progressed eventually down to this four-member band through various personnel changes. At one point, we lost two keyboard players in one blow.
That obviously affects the concept.
Yes, it does to a certain extent, but we had the advantage at that point. Roger Powell was playing synthesizer, and Roger, as well as being a synthesizer player, happens to be a classical and jazz keyboard player. So he managed to take up the slack fairly well. At another point, we changed drummers. John Wilcox, who was playing with Hall & Oates previous to that, joined the band. And then last year, Kazim Sultan joined the band, and was at that point that we made more or less the most radical transition because we ceased to be an instrumentally-oriented band and became a vocally-oriented band, more or less.
How do you answer those critics, Todd, who say that the music that you're making with Utopia is inaccessible to the, quote, average listener?
Oh, I don't answer them. You know, I mean, they got their own problems, I suppose, you know.
But can you see a distinct difference?
I can see a difference, you know, but I've never considered that our music was necessarily more inaccessible than, say, Yes Record or Weather Report or anything like that, you know, or any of your fusion bands. At the same time, it didn't help the band identity because I was so closely associated with things like Hello, It's Me and stuff from the Something Anything
period. Sure, a mistaken identity problem.
Right,
on the part
so they
of an
expect
audience.
The band to be playing material like that as well. I think it eventually, you know, like our big break will come, you know, and then people will pick up on the other stuff that we've done, you know. Although a lot of it, as you go back further and further, it becomes more drastically different from what we're doing now.
You've gotten some distance from Oops, Wrong Planet. Is it an album that you're pleased with in retrospect?
Yeah, you know, we're pretty happy with it. It's fun to play the material live. It's mostly a song record. And subsequently, it's sold more than any other Utopia album so far. And it continues to move the old product. So,
could you pick something from it to play for our listeners?
Sure. Well, they, you know, record company is always ecstatic when you play the single. So,
which is
Love Is the Answer.
Love Is the Answer, which is the single from Oops, Wrong Planet by Utopia. Are you billed these days as Todd Rundgren's Utopia or?
Officially, no. It's just billed as Utopia.
Okay.
And reason why is because soon probably everyone will be doing solo efforts as well, myself included, and we want to keep as much of a distinction as possible.
Have you mapped out what you'll do as a solo this go around?
Yeah, I've started the tracks already. I'm doing more or less a vocally oriented album since I haven't done an album for a while.
Original material?
Yeah, all original material, and it'll be mostly just things to highlight my singing.
I would like to ask you about another current project that you're involved with that's stirring a lot of interest and attention around the country, that being the Meatloaf album. Who, what, where, when, why Meatloaf?
Well, I met Meatloaf through Moogie, as a matter of fact. They had a real strong concept and one that appeared to me to be challenging to bring to vinyl. So,
were they doing live what we hear on the record, or did you forge a good part of that sound?
Well, I think they had attempted to do live what they were doing on the record, but at the time they had no band. They had singers. They had a whole thing of singers, and they had Jim Steinman, the guy who wrote the material, was playing the piano, and they had a concept. And they had done some recordings, none of which I don't think resemble the final things that we came up with.
Are you a harsh taskmaster as a producer?
I don't think I'm harsh. Like, I don't have a, you know, I'm not into, you know, Gestapo tactics in the studio. And I suppose the most distinctive thing that I do on any of the records that I do is the mix, you know, is the kind of mix that I do on the album. I just don't waste time in the studio. I've never taken 6 months to make an album like some people, or I guess the longest consecutive time I've ever spent making a record is maybe a month or a month and a half.
In the case of Meatloaf, whose idea was it to use some of Bruce Springsteen's musicians? And do you think that to an extent that marks the genre of music that Meatloaf is working in?
Well, that was the genre of music that Jim Steinman, for instance, the composer, that's one of his influences. And subsequently, they suggested or demanded those musicians, you know. It's not to say that it couldn't have sounded the same or similar with other musicians.
One last question, Todd. It's been a long time since the Nas days. Have you accomplished what you set out to?
Well, my goals in the Nas days were a lot different. We just wanted to be the most famous rock and roll band in the world, you know. And that was it. When that didn't happen, I changed my priorities altogether. I decided I was going to make music for different, you know, altogether different reasons, which were mostly musical and to communicate things that other people weren't communicating, perhaps. And at this point, some of my goals are not all musical. I have my own video studio, and I'm getting more and more involved in different media of expression besides music.
Well, we have shared your vision of music for a long time. No reason why it shouldn't continue.
No reason why not.
Thanks for joining us on the Crawdaddy Rock Review.
Sure.
And now the Crawdaddy Rock Review presents a brief listen to some unsettling news and nonsense facts from around the national neighborhood. The coroner's office reports that the brain of a 15-year-old murder victim has been turned over to a private company which plans to bring her back to life. Coroner's investigator John Harden says that TransTime Inc. claimed the brain of Patricia Wilson, who was beaten to death during a robbery. TransTime is a cryogenic company which believes that science one day may have the ability to take a few cells from a preserved organ, such as the brain, and regenerate these into a new living being. If you happen to hear voices talking back to you next time you wander into a cemetery, don't jump into a ditch. A company called Creative Tombstones is marketing what it calls computerized tombstones. The grave markers feature a built-in synthesizer, which duplicates the voice of the loved one cooing such pleasantries as, "Hi, I'm Jane Smith. I died on July 15, 1977 at 3:02 p.m. A chemical firm called Lead Free Chemicals has mixed 9 parts of distilled water with 1 part chopped cabbage under high temperatures and pressure, run an electrical current through the soup, and come up with a 100-plus octane fuel that can power an automobile. Elton John has recently completed a painful and expensive series of hair transplants at a Paris clinic. Elton's new locks have taken root, but he'll still wear a hat until his budding curls are longer and better looking. And for you sports fans, hazards on the average golf course usually include sand traps, lakes, and deep rough. But at the Elephant Hills Country Club in Rhodesia, golfers must contend with crocodiles, elephants, warthogs, and sleeping buffalo. Club officials have had to reshape the standards of play found in the rules of golf set down by the Royal and Ancient Golf Club of Scotland. One local rule states that if a baboon picks up a ball, the player can hit another, but only if he retrieves the original ball within 3 minutes. That's it for today's nonsense news. I'm Pete Fornichal. And now the Crawdaddy Rock Review, presented by Discwasher, gives you a capsule summary of thoughts and reactions to a brand new album release. Alan Price. Because it plays so committed, so much harder than his other recent LPs, this album is Price's most stunning collection of tunes since Oh Lucky Man.
Lovers are bound to quarrel on some rainy day. And should their love be dying, they're in each other's way. Words are often spoken with such little truth behind them. So I'm gonna leave the door open in case you change your mind.
Outside of the trad music hall humanity, earthy tunesmithing, wraparound R&B vocalists, and monolithically wailing keyboards, you can feel Price's anger burning up the grooves.
Well, I'm a poor boy, but I'm smarter than the rest. I'm a poor boy, and I won't take second best. I'm coming after you, and there's nothing you can do. So give me your love, 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 love. Well, I'm a poor boy, but I've got myself a plan. I'm a poor boy, gonna steal it from your man. There's nothing he can say, 'cause I'll get you anyway. So give me your love.
Rainbows End dives deep with Randy Newman-type social bitterness geographically transplanted to Price's native County Durham.
Who lived their alcoholic life in hazy, lazy days, going all confined and mad. And their husbands are executives. The title just more credit to live. They'll hold their kids and say, what a wonderful time we're gonna have.
Price is just a little closer to human, is all. At the bottom line, he's a moralist, and like Newman, Jackson Browne, and Keith Reed, it's a delightful obsolescence to run into these wild modern times. What's more, I've Been Hurt is his hottest pick to click in years. I'm a Gambler has one of the meanest organ stomps in recorded history. Editors of Crawdaddy Magazine feel that this is more worldly wise Price, but it would be criminal to bill his trademarks as cliches.